connected with their relatives who could send them SIM cards via simple mail. Those SIM cards came from countries like Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Emirates, and they were able to connect to internet using roaming and mobile data. And they were able to report from country where a complete shutdown was happening, to a point that some countries started to block those SIM cards, but also some authorities decided to monitor those communications and report them to the Sudanese government, and this led to some arrests.
This is, Hassan explains, one of the most important yet often overlooked factors to take into consideration during a shutdown. Getting online is not the only measure of success. You also need to protect yourself from monitoring, surveillance, and possible consequent persecution.
To say that the circumvention succeeded doesn't mean that you just get access to the censored data or her content. You need to do that while you are really protecting your communications, protecting your identity. You really need to secure yourself and secure your identity online when attempting to bypass the shutdown, because otherwise it could really result in you being in troubles and other people around you, like your contacts, getting into trouble or being arrested.
Before any action can be taken against a shutdown, we first need to know what we are dealing with. How do we know exactly when a shutdown is taking place? What kind of shutdown and which regions are affected? Is it a partial shutdown, a slowdown, a social media blackout, or targeted web page censorship? Is it regional, national, or just in your district? Maria Zaino works on answering these questions at the Open Observatory of Network Interference, or UNI for short.
UNI is a free software project where we measure internet censorship around the world. And as part of my role with UNI, I manage our research and community engagement efforts.
UNI started as an initiative that could help identify, track, and report on different kinds of internet censorships or shutdowns.
The UNI project was born out of the Tor project. Back in 2011, it was started by Tor developers at the time, who essentially wanted to create the first open methodologies and the first free and open source software that anyone around the world could run in order to measure internet censorship.
UNI is powered by user-generated data. They created free open source tools such as UniProbe to source and correlate network connectivity data from around the world.
In order to understand what is happening on the internet, you literally would have to inspect and measure every single network on the internet, given that the internet is not one network, but hundreds of thousands of many different networks. And so in order to be able to know what is blocked all around the world, the question is that of crowdsourcing the data, crowdsourcing the measurements, collecting them in a centralized way, and then publishing them so that everyone around the world can have access to these measurements. And so that is why the UNI system was designed in the way that it was, where essentially the way that it would work is that anyone could use the tools for free and run tests to measure the network. And then the results from their testing would be automatically sent to UNI servers, where it would be automatically processed and automatically published.
But how exactly does UNI work? As Maria explains, it is quite fascinating.
If you want to contribute measurements, you can do that by running UniProbe. UniProbe is available for both mobile and desktop platforms. On mobile, you can install it on Android and iOS, and it's also available for F-Droid. On desktop, you can install UniProbe on Windows, on Mac, and on Linux.
The free and open source UniProbe application has a range of tests that you can run on your own network in order to contribute data and measurements to the UNI database.
One type of test is that which measures the blocking of websites. The way it works is that our test performs certain types of checks, and it performs these checks automatically over two vantage points. The one vantage point is yours as the user. The The other one is a control vantage point, which we consider to be a non-censored network. And so it performs these three checks from both networks, and it automatically compares the results. If one of the checks from one of the two networks differs, then that is a signal that there may be blocking happening, but a confirmation would have to happen manually.
You can almost think of UNI as part of the internet's immune system, sending real-time alerts whenever it detects an anomaly or a threatening interference. It is only when an alert is sent that we can react.
In fact, confirming a case of intentional censorship on the internet can be very tricky. It can be very tricky to confirm unless you perform measurement on the network level. And because it can be so tricky, and because there are so many reasons why websites and apps and different internet services can be inaccessible, which may have nothing to do with intentional government censorship, that is why governments can then seek plausible deniability. In other words, they can deny that they intentionally shut down access to specific services.
Intervention and circumvention of internet shutdowns can only happen if we know a shutdown is taking place or about to take place. For that, we need accurate and timely data.
Our goal has been that of openly publishing measurements on an ongoing basis so that we can increase transparency of internet censorship around the world, but also so that we can enable third parties to independently investigate cases of internet censorship and to independently verify any claims or findings that we communicate through our research reports.
Each disruption of network connectivity leaves a measurable trace. By recording these traces of disruption, UNI can create data-driven reports to increase transparency of internet censorship to support advocacy efforts.
In order for human rights activists, in order for human rights defenders to challenge governments and to challenge them legally that, you know, they're intentionally blocking access to specific services, they need to have evidence. And when we're talking about internet censorship, which is implemented on the network level, I think the only real evidence you can have is that of network measurement, that which literally looks at what is happening on the network and shows how an ISP is blocking access to a specific website. So that's a sort of raw data that I think can sometimes almost undeniably serve as evidence of blocking. And so I feel that is extremely valuable data to support campaigns and to support advocacy efforts against internet shutdowns, and which can potentially, you know, even help win cases in court.
Collecting data is just one part of the puzzle. The other part of the puzzle is making the data available in a way that is useful to digital rights activists, organizations, and journalists.
So UNI measurements are published in primarily two places. The one place is called UNI Explorer, which is a web platform which is designed with human rights defenders in mind and the general public. By using UNI Explorer, you can search through the measurements. There is a web interface that enables you to filter the measurements based on the country that you're interested in, based on the UNI probe test that you care about.
In near real time, they analyze and openly publish all their network measurements, creating what is arguably the largest publicly available resource on internet censorships and shutdowns to date.
Every month, we collect on average hundreds of thousands of measurements from around 210 countries around the world. And these are from tens of thousands of different networks, providing insight on the potential blocking of websites, measuring the blocking of instant messaging apps, circumvention tools, and a number of other tests. And so we feel that this large data set it provides insight on all these different types of network interference. And so we definitely encourage data analysts and researchers and human rights advocates out there to make use of this data and to uncover cases of internet censorship that we may not be aware of, and to bring them to the public in order to encourage more public discussion around these cases.
The internet exists as a collection of nodes, hubs, and networked computers. Similarly, the fight against internet shutdowns rely on a network of tools, tactics, people and organizations all working together. Part of UNI's work is to run a partnership program through which local organizations can contribute and also use UNI's data in the fight against internet shutdowns and censorship in their regions. One of these partners is Venezuela Sin Filtro.
Venezuela Sin Filtro is the project that analyzes and documents the systematic and egregious human rights violations in the digital space. So primarily, we document almost in real time when we can internet censorship events. So Venezuela Sin Filtro has multiple ways of identifying and documenting censorship, but the most important one for us is using UNI.
This is Andres Aspurua, who lives and works in Caracas, Venezuela.
I work in Venezuela doing research and advocacy against internet censorship, including internet blocks, internet shutdowns, and we also try to document other kinds of egregious violations of human rights online. So we do documentation analysis on state-sponsored threats in Venezuela against citizens, activists, journalists, and so on.
What makes Venezuela a unique case is that the government controls most of the essential infrastructures in the country. This includes the main internet service provider, or ISP, in the country, CAN TV.
So in Venezuela, most landline internet connections are with CAN TV. It's one of the facilities or capacities to control that the government has. Because even though all mobile ISPs and mobile operators implement the censorship that they are required to implement by the telecom regulators, CAN TV, the state-owned ISP, I mean, they go far beyond that. They do these kinds of real-time blocking that is not the same that they require to the other ones. Because in some cases, the other ones don't even have the technology to implement such kinds of blocking.
The control over internet access allows the government to create very targeted internet blocks.
So we started to see what we call SNI filtering in 2018, where even encrypted connections could be blocked, taking individual packages apart and understanding how the initial connection was being made between your computer or phone and the server you wanted to talk to. And that same year, we also saw the first time the Venezuelan government blocked the Tor network. So people using Tor browser or using Tor in other ways, they could be using it for anonymity or to circumvent other kinds of censorship. That was a wake-up call on the interest on increasingly sophisticated censorship and attacks in Venezuela. And we were not wrong.
Although these are not full shutdowns, micro-targeted blocks inhibit people from accessing the information they need at the time that they need it most.
Yeah, so in Venezuela, the problem of internal censorship is increasingly complex. It's not a matter of whether someday a new kind of website is being blocked. Is far more complex. We have short blocked internet blocks that last just 20 minutes. But in that 20 minutes, it was the 20 minutes that affected most people's access just when the news was the most relevant.
When people finally get online, they need to find ways to access censored content. News sites have found ingenious ways to help people share censored information.
So you have a community of journalists and independent news organizations that are trying to find different ways to get the news to their audiences. So instead of just publishing on their website and letting people come to them, they know that they can't do that anymore. So we have stuff like WhatsApp groups and Telegram groups where individual journalists or even the newspaper, the online news organizations coordinate those groups so that they can like share information in different ways. Stuff like taking pictures of their content so that people can share that image on social media without having to get to the news website itself, which is blocked. So at least they get a brief version of that content.
On the other hand, Users are also finding ways to access blocked information online.
Most people try to use a VPN, and you have like networks of people trying to help them, each other, how to connect to the VPNs. But we also have problems of poverty and lack to access to like payment methods abroad. And just, I mean, the Venezuelan minimum wage is $4 per month. Imagine how many people can't afford just an online VPN server they have to pay for. So like find information, what are the free options or what are the free options that work for them? That's one of the reasons why we had to set up this tutorial. One, to give a clear, recommended, safe and secure option. And the other one is to help people how to connect, because in Venezuela is something that everyone needs. Even your uncle or your grandfather need a VPN so that they can connect to news websites and see their news. So that's why we had to set this up.
One of the things that Andres and Venezuela Inteligente does is to publish friendly, informative, and easy-to-understand videos about circumvention tools and tactics.
The tutorial videos started very recently. We have just started 3 weeks ago, and since then we have been releasing one weekly. We distribute them mostly over social media. So we have them on YouTube at Conexión Segura. So you find Conexión Segura, which translates to secure connection.
Trabajo remoto, educación a distancia, reuniones virtuales con familiares y amigos. Todas estas son totalmente frecuentes.
So we're covering the very basics, like how to use a VPN to avoid censorship. This is how you open an app store. This is how you download it. Now you click here. You have to give permissions, stuff like that, so that no one gets like trapped because of their basic digital capacities or digital literacy, and they can still connect to the internet and watch censored information.
Where there is a will to remain connected, there is a way to regain access.
In Venezuela, that's the last place for free expression. Even though we see all of this censorship and all of these limitations and risks that I've been mentioning, the internet continues to be the last only place where people can freely criticize the government and share news that might be undesirable by the government. Even with all of this, it's the only place that we can prepare, have tools, and have techniques to overcome those risks and those limitations and continue to connect.
Unlike in Venezuela, where internet censorship and shutdowns only really saw an uptake in recent years, on the other side of the world, we find Iran. The Islamic Republic of Iran has a long history of internet censorship and shutdowns and has emerged as one of the nations with the most sophisticated arsenal for domestic internet monitoring and control.
My name is Amir Rashidi. I'm internet security and digital rights researcher. Recently, I joined an organization named MIAN as a director of internet security and digital rights. And my main focus in the past 10 years was on monitoring the situation of internet in Iran, cyber attacks, censorship, internet disruption, and shutdown in Iran.
Amir is currently working and living in the USA, having fled his home country in 2019. For the last 10 years, he has been working fervently to measure, document, and intervene in censorship and shutdowns in Iran. To help us understand the situation in Iran, Amir gave us a brief history of the internet.
I would say internet censorship was born in Iran almost on the same day that internet became available in Iran. This is the time that the access to the internet was through dial-up network.
But even back then, the Iranian government had already started formalizing and institutionalizing their absolute control over the internet.
So when the Iranian authorities was faced and challenged with the publishing articles on blogs, they tried to basically create an institute and bodies and pass the laws, creating policies to control the information flow on internet. At the beginning of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad presidency, they start to create a project that at the beginning they used to call it Halal Internet. Finally, they call it National Information Network, NIN.
The NIN, or National Information Network, was an idea for a national intranet that would replace access to global internet in Iran.
The basic idea back then, especially during the Ahmadinejad, was creating a wall around Iran and basically disconnect Iran from the rest of the world.
But Ahmadinejad did not understand that without connection to the outside world, a national intranet would never be able to replace the internet. The next president of Iran, Hassan Rouhani, knew just how important connecting to the global internet was if Iran was to keep up with other countries.
So when Rouhani came to the power, his basic idea was engaging with the rest of the world, was negotiating rest of the world to solve the political problem and create jobs and more economic opportunity for the people. He did something good. For example, I do believe it was almost first or the second months of his presidency, Rouhani, he revoked a law that was passed by Ahmadinejad government, which basically prohibited having access to the fast internet.
But Rouhani, who had a background of national security, also knew that the failed National Information Network project could be the most sophisticated mechanism of state control in the country's history.
So what he did was finishing the project that Ahmadinejad was actually starting, the national internet. So he basically created that wall, but it's like he created the wall, but at the same time, he kept some gates open for communication with the rest of the world.
Basically, what that means is that Rouhani's government created a state-controlled network in Iran, and only through that controlled network could people connect to the global internet.
Imagine you are in your office and you have access to the internet. It's like there is an internal network inside your office that you have access to your mail server, your own mail server inside the office. You have access to your own databases inside the office. But also there is one gate that you can access to the global internet as well.
This allows Rouhani's government to shut down access to the global internet, but keep all the internal networks active. It is a shutdown of a new kind. It is a shutdown that allows a country to keep functioning relatively normal while internet access remains blocked.
We saw in November shutdown that network was working and working very well. And this is the current situation of internet in Iran. So it's quite unique because most of the countries that do internet shutdown, they don't have a local network inside the country. So when they shut down the network, shut down the internet, everything is going to be shut down. But in Iran, when they shut down the internet, the local services, local mail server, local search engine, local like Uber, online taxis, and you know all of these services which are local are operating, but you don't have access to the global internet.
Amir says that Iran will never be able to emulate China's national intranet, the Great Firewall of China, because the Iranian people refuse to remain cut off from the rest of the world.
Circumventing internet censorship is happening like it was happening in the past. But again, because we have like a really long history record of internet censorship in Iran, almost everyone in Iran knows how to bypass the censorship. Tor is available. Tor is really slow, but it's available. Siphon is available. Google Outline is available. Yeah, everyone are using VPN and circumvention tools, different circumvention tools that is available in Iran. Oh yeah, even my mom knows how to bypass the censorship because like it's, I don't know how long, it's like maybe more than 20 years that we are dealing with the censorship.
But these circumvention tools do not help much when Rouhani's government decides to close the gates between the national intranet and the global internet.
The most fear in Iran is the fear of another shutdown. Every time that we have disruption in Iran, that even that disruption might be some technical problem. If you look at the Farsi Twitter, all of the Iranian people inside Iran, they are asking, are they going to shut down the internet again? Is it happening again? So the fear atmosphere is really damaging the social and mental life of Iranians.
Iran, a country with one of the most advanced cybersecurity arsenals in the world, is setting a precedent and becoming an example for other repressive regimes. This new form of kill switch doesn't disrupt the national economy or information network. Yet still, citizens are cut off from the rest of the world. But as we see around the world, people are determined to remain connected. As the government created more sophisticated tools, activists, engineers, and ordinary people are doing their best to keep up and keep themselves online. In the next episode of Kill Switch, we talk to human rights defenders and advocates about the challenges they face due to these internet shutdowns. For more information about how to support the Keep It On Coalition and our work, visit our website www.accessnow.org. This podcast was produced by Access Now and Volume, with funding support from Internews. Our music is by Oman Mori. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and share as widely as possible to help the fight against internet shutdowns. I am your host, Felicia Antonio, and you have been listening to Kill Switch. Goodbye, and remember to keep it on.
Dusty wind blew across the high plains as a stranger rode into town with a certain reputation for the ladies and a gun. Walked to the bar so casual, just as easy as you please. He was bound to do some damage with those Valentino eyes. Well,
said, I never stay too long. When she knew that he would leave her, son said, shut that gunman down. Ah!
tell my troubles to.
Меня не раз кусали акулы, меня не раз кусали собаки. Я гуляла в грозу с металлическим жезлом. Я тонула, я лезла в дворовые драки. Я пережила уже три конца света, два тысячелетия пережила тех и этих, и мозоль от каблука, и налоговика, и темные века, и дождевые облака, и продукты горения плохого табака, половое заражение и лису, и колобка. Переживу пожилых, водяных, домовых, и на пошлой открытке поздравительный стих, и смерть родных, и удар под дых, и киданье риса в молодых, бересту и папирус, и брючки на вырост, и подвальную сырость, и коронавирус, и удары в пах, и союза крах, герметичные запайки на цинковых гробах, и сжигание на кострах, и дырки на зубах, истерии и страх, и муха черепах. И я переживу и вас, и нас, переживу и смех, и грех, переживу и все, и все, переживу. Я переживу и вас, и нас, переживу и смех, и грех, переживу и все, и все, переживу. И детей с леденцами, и вождей с близнецами, перманент и пергамент, разморозку криокамер, дураков в инстаграме, ураганы, цунами, Билли Айлиш в Панаме, и всех и же с вами, и кокошник, и чуму, и сто тысяч почему, и бубонную чуму, и вову-вову чуму, инопланетную вражду, и лебеденка на пруду, новый рэп и старый рок, и бабулин свитерок, и не съест меня голодный, голодный волк, и не задавит пехотный, пехотный полк. Только спросите на меня горсть земли, как прошепчут губы мои. Я переживу и вас, и нас, переживу и смех, и грех, переживу и все, и всех, переживу. Я переживу и вас, и нас, переживу и смех, и грех, переживу и все, и всех, переживу.
Переживу я. Спасибо вам! Впервые на супершоу!
Shaman.